This is John White from JWFinancialCoaching.com, and you're listening to Steve Stewart on the Money Plan SOS podcast.
Hello, welcome back to the Money Plan SOS podcast. I'm your humble servant and personal finance architect, Steve Stewart, who hates your debt more than you. This is the show that helps the everyday American to pay attention, not interest. When I say the word retirement, what do you think of? Do you think of gray hair and a golf club in your hand? Do you think about traveling the world? Do you think about not working? And when you think about that, is there a date in mind? Do you have an age or a specific date? Something that comes due like a pension or you get pushed into Social Security? What do you think about when you think of retirement? We're going to define or redefine the word retirement today with Mitch Anthony. Mitch Anthony is a sought-after financial services consultant. He's a popular speaker, host of the Daily Dose radio program. He's got some books out. One is Story Selling for Financial Advisors, which was acclaimed by Financial Planning Magazine as its number one essential read. And you can find more about him at MitchAnthony.com. Mr. Anthony, thank you for coming to the show.
Yeah, my pleasure, Steve.
You're really big into the whole idea of retirement, but not in the traditional sense. What do you define as retirement?
Well, I have sort of three working definitions. Number one, retirement is an artificially imposed finish line. In other words, somebody else is telling us, and who that somebody else is could be an institution, could be a government, could be a cultural thing. But they're basically telling us when you reach this number, 62, 65, pick a number in that range, you're done. That's why I refer to retirement as an artificial finish line. I didn't choose that finish line. Somebody else pointed it out for me and said, once I cross that, game's over. Mm-hmm. I object. Number two, I believe that retirement is an unnatural act. It's not an organic part of the life course. When you look at the natural maturation of children growing up and going to work and having the families and becoming mature and going through life, retirement just has this feeling of something superimposed upon us. Mm-hmm. And then finally, from sort of a bigger picture point of view, I would say that retirement, if I look at it from the last 130 years, is a social experiment that's run its course. It was designed in the industrial age for industrial age purposes, i.e., what you traded for a paycheck in the industrial age was physical capacity, physical strength, physical output. Mm-hmm. And it just made sense in the industrial age model that once you reached the age of 62, 65, you didn't have the amount of physical capital you did at 20, 22, 30, 32, and that it would make sense to take you out of that industrial assembly line and replace you with a 22-year-old. In the day and age we live in, Steve, we're not trading physical capacity. We're trading intellectual capacity. We're trading know-how, know-who. We're trading relational capacity. And so a big overarching question I like to pose around retirement is, what is the expiration date on your intellectual capital? That's a good starting point for that discussion.
Right. And it is a completely different world than it was 20, 30, even 10 years ago. It's changed since then.
So yeah, ask Warren Buffett what the expiration date is on his intellectual capital.
Very true, very true.
Right, so, because see, you know, we talk about compounding interest a lot in money circles, right, Steve? Mm-hmm. Well, what about the compounding effect of wisdom and knowledge gained and having all these experiences compiling? You know, I often say to people that are on the cusp of retirement, you know, the worst time to start drawing down your assets is when the compounding effect begins to kick in. Well, when does compounding begin to kick in? In the last 10 years, mm-hmm. right? And so right at that point, we're going to start tapping our money. And then I use that as an analogy to say, and when does your intellectual capital compound? Right? As long as you're fascinated by what you do and as long as you're articulate and lucid, and you have perspicacity, you can keep doing what you're doing. It's what you find, and I've done a lot of research on this, and I've talked to hundreds of people, is that when you unplug that and you stop using that intellectual capacity, that's when it begins to go down the spiral.
Yeah. But you're not saying not to save for retirement. You're just saying that we have to redefine the word retirement in our minds.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. But I'll tell you, I feel like I've been a part of a losing team when it comes to redefining retirement, because we've been trying to change the word, supplant the word. It's not going to happen. It's firmly entrenched in our lexicon, in our world, okay? Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, let's think of retirement savings as really what it truly is. It's emancipation savings. It's autonomy savings. What I'm really saving, I'm actually more motivated to save toward autonomy than I am retirement. And what? Let's step back one moment and ask ourselves, what's the best thing money can buy us? It's the freedom to do what we want. Mm-hmm. So it's really autonomy savings. I'm saving toward a time when I can make my own calls in life.
So you're saying it's more important to save for a goal than it is to save for a date.
I think, yeah, that's exactly right. That's right. Because the date, you know, what's going to change on that date? People have wake-up calls. You know, people don't realize what happens when that date comes. There's so many things that happen psychologically. And, you know, for example, I always tell people one of the most dangerous days of your life is the last day you cash a paycheck. And you know why it's dangerous? Because from that day forward, the price of everything begins to matter. Because you now have settled into a static income against dynamically rising costs. Taxes aren't going down. Gas prices aren't going down, food costs aren't going down, but your income's become static, and that gap is going to get wider and wider over time. So that's a really scary thing.
That would be the fixed income that you hear from Jerry Seinfeld's uncle, right, when he's screaming about, she's on a fixed income.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you a funny story. I was in Las Vegas visiting my dad a few months ago, and it's a Tuesday afternoon. We're sitting around a sports book, you know, watching games and stuff. And he said, hey, you want to go to the matinee today? They got a theater in this casino. I said, sure, let's go. I said, what time is it? He said, 1 o'clock. I thought, oh, this is going to be great. Be nobody in the theater. We go in the theater, Steve. It's packed. And I look at my dad like, what the heck? He said, dollar off Tuesday, 1 o'clock. They pack the place out because they're all on the static incomes.
Wow.
Yeah, so to me, it's much more motivating to just save toward that day when nobody's going to tell me what to do with my life. And if I want to continue working, then I'll continue working. Or if I want to work part-time, I'll work part-time. But, you know, there's a lot of people. I mean, we can categorize people into different groups, and I don't know where you fall in this, Steve, but I fall into the group that says, I haven't worked a day in my life. I love what I do. I wake up every day with zeal, enthusiasm. My brain is clicking. I'm focused. It's like, pinch me. What's going on here? I love this.
Yeah.
So why would I quit? Plus, the other side of it is, you know, it's about being in balance. People, we live in a binging society. People, they you know, we send kids to school and we have them binge on education. By the time they get done, they don't ever want to read a book again, which, by the way, isn't good for us authors.
Yeah.
And then they're going to binge on work, and they're going to work themselves to the threadbare bone. And then they're supposed to spend the rest of their life binging on play. It doesn't work. The verdict's in. The research is in. What we really need is to find the perfect balance between vocation and vacation. Mm-hmm. You get those two things in balance, you got a really nice life, and there's no need to quit.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Mitch Anthony. He's the author of The New Retirementality, Planning Your Life and Living Your Dreams at Any Age You Want. Mitch, now in your book, you refer to the ROL, Return on Life. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Tell me, listeners.
Yeah, Return on Life is a juxtaposition of what most people think of when it comes to money, and that's ROI. You know, I got to put as much money away as I can. I got to get the best rate of return so that someday I have this great big pile of money, and that somehow that big pile of money is going to make me happy. And I'm saying, you know what? Let's move ROI out to the secondary or tertiary seat, and let's put in the center ROL. That's return on life. And my definition of return on life is getting the best life I can with the money I have. Okay? Mm-hmm. So there's an assumption of striving for contentment here. And that means I'm not trying to live a life I can't afford. You know, you talked about debt earlier in our pre-call here. Why are people in debt? Because they're trying to live lives they can't afford to live.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So that completely goes against an ROL approach. You live the best life you can with the money you have, and don't put ulterior stresses on that life by trying to buy things you don't need. Mm-hmm. or you know, outstretching. I mean, I got a friend named Dick Wagner who says there's only three rules to being successful financially. Number one, spend less than you make.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, save all you can. Number three, don't do anything stupid. Well, it's number three where we all get tripped up, right? Right? But some people are tripping up at number one. They're spending less than they make. I was raised with that. My father taught me. He said, just try to live on half of what you make. And you're never going to have to worry about anything. So ROL assumes that the point of money is to get a good life, not to exhaust my life in the pursuit of a pile of money. There's a big difference between those two approaches.
Mm-hmm. You advise a host of financial advisors. That's what you've been doing for the past couple of decades. So you probably get a really big insight on the youth of today. What seems to be the biggest problem with having them start to look that far in advance in their life, where they know that they're going to need to have a bunch of money saved up for a goal, not retirement, but for a goal?
Well, you know, it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I've got this thing in the book called Maslow Meets Retirement. Maslow had it right. He said you can't engage people in a conversation about their high-level needs until their basic-level needs have been met.
Yes.
Right? So the starting point for any discussion, according to Maslow's idea, is survival. How much money do I need to survive? Think of kids in their 20s. They're still in survival mode. Right? Mm-hmm. They're just... And really, when you're in your 20s, I always tell people in that age group that that's the exploration stage of work. That's where you're actually trying to find things you don't like to do, right? It's a process of elimination. Unless, you know, every once in a while you run into somebody who has a very clear picture when they're young. But wouldn't you agree that a lot of young people are still kind of trying to find their way around?
Yeah.
Right? It's like I've got one son. He knew when he was 7 years old he was going to be a park ranger. Today, he's a park ranger in the Kenai Peninsula, Alaska. He's a rarity,
mm-hmm.
right? There's not many people that way. And so I just think it's important to, you know, according to Maslow, you got to figure out what it's going to cost to survive. Then the next stage in that equation is safety. How do I keep myself safe? And then it comes down to loved ones and sort of fashioning a life. And then ultimately we get up to self-actualization, as Maslow called it, which is sort of in that goals category. I don't think people really get engaged in the whole retirement savings thing till they're in their late 30s, early 40s, and they've wasted a lot of time, as I'm sure you've told your listeners time and again.
Right.
The conversation I've had with all my kids, as a matter of fact, my 19-year-old just started a retirement savings account, put $1,000 in it because I showed him the table that said, you know, if you one guy saves $1,000 starting at age 19 until he's 59, and the other guy doesn't start till he's 30, and you know the differences, right?
Right? Yeah.
It's massive amounts of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the exact table. Maybe you'd remember this, but if you started at 19 and quit contributing at 35, you're going to have way more money than the guy that starts at 30 and contributes more money up till 59.
Yeah, many of my listeners would be familiar with Dave Ramsey's chart, which he calls the Ben and Arthur chart, which does that exact comparison.
Yes, yes. And so that's one thing I found that motivates younger people because, you know, hey, why don't you be smarter than all your friends? Start now.
Mm-hmm. Something we need to be teaching in school, don't you think?
Absolutely. We need to be teaching financial concepts to younger kids. As I was mentioning to you earlier, Steve, I've developed some Seussian-type books for kids. One's called The Cash in a Hat. Explain to kids how debt works and how credit works and how you have to keep yourself safe from the temptations surrounding those things.
Mm-hmm. I've got another question for you before we finish up here, because we've got the idea that retirement is just a state of mind. We really don't have it as a specific date in our future.
Yes.
When you have somebody who's in their 40s or their 50s and now they're looking at, you know, a change in their workflow, a change in their career, or maybe just deciding someday to stop working altogether, what are some practical steps that you can help with? Because most of my listeners are either they're in debt and trying to get out of debt, or they've just gotten out of debt and they're trying to figure out what to do next. What kind of advice would you give?
Well, I don't know that my advice is going to pertain particularly to debt. Let's just talk about when would I retire?
Okay.
right? Not from a how much money will I need point of view, but let's talk about, to me, if you're going to have a conversation about whether or not you're going to retire or how much you're going to retire or how much you're going to work, you have to talk about work because that's what we're retiring from. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that people grossly underestimate is the value of work in their life. Right. When you stop working cold turkey, you're not only turning off that income spigot, but you're also turning off a spigot that's giving you all kinds of psychological intangibles. So, for example, here's my working definition of work, if you will. Work is an engagement that brings value to others and meaning to me. Okay, so let's mull that over a little bit. It's an engagement that brings value to others and meaning to me. You and I are working right now, mm-hmm. right? We're in an engagement that's bringing value to others and meaning to ourselves. Now, I often ask my audiences, tell me what's wrong with the following statement. At the age of 65, a person should no longer be engaged in activities that bring value to others and meaning to themselves. Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
No.
And so, you know, for example, I found that people don't learn this lesson until it's too late. They've already retired. They've already walked away. And they realize, wow, some of my best social connectivity happened at work. Mm-hmm. Or it makes me curious to learn how to fix certain problems. Or it's a creative challenge for me. It's like my attorney said to me, he said, I'll never retire. I love fixing people's problems. And I can't change that about myself. There's all kinds of psychological benefits to work that people underestimate. They don't understand that they need these things in their life. Do they need it 40, 50 hours a week? Maybe not. Maybe they only need it 10, 20 hours a week. But work is a natural state. I mean, think about before this whole panacea of institutionalized retirement came to America, did you know that 90% of the people who are 65 or older in 1935 were working?
Sounds about right. What were they working in?
It might have been agrarian culture. It might have been grandpa on the farm we all know stories like that. But Pete, it's just part of the natural state. And some of the most successful aging cultures in our world, if you've studied the blue zones, are cultures where people are working. They never stop working. For example, Okinawa Island, they don't even have a word. It's one of the most successful aging populations in the world. They don't even have a word for retirement there. Now, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
But they do have a word called Ikagawa. And it's very common to hear a 90-year-old and 85-year-old having a conversation about what is your Ikagawa. And the best translation I can give of the word Ikagawa is, what's your reason for waking up today?
Oh, that's good. I like that a lot.
You've got to have a reason.
Yeah. Purpose.
And see, retirement has stripped that from many people's lives. It's like, it's like one guy told me, he said within 3 weeks I was wandering around my garage and basement looking for something to break so I'd have something to fix. Think of that.
Yeah.
We gotta have a purpose in life. And so, money's really an important issue. But I always tell people, I say, what if you're one of the lucky ones? Let's say you have $3.5 million saved in investable assets, but you wake up on day 43 of retirement with no joy and no purpose. Are you still rich?
Mm-mm.
Money can't buy purpose. And these are, to me, we talk about practical considerations. My psychological health is a practical consideration, although existential. Have you seen the movie about Schmidt? With Jack Nicholson, I always tell advisors, and if you got a man who's close to 60 and thinks he's ready to retire, have him watch About Schmidt with Jack Nicholson. It is the most poignant portrait of the existential crisis that hits a man, especially upon retirement. Women, for some reason, seem to find balance easier in life than men, mm-hmm. but it's just a powerful portrait.
Well, I think I can give a testimony as well. I had a father-in-law who was reaching his upper 80s. He was still working. Until then, he was a salesman. He kept working and working until finally there was a health issue that took him out. They put him in a desk, and his health just declined. And it wasn't just from the ailment. It was from not being able to do what he loved.
That's exactly what it is.
Yep. So,
well, I remember, of course, this is probably 15, 20 years ago, but we have an IBM plant in our town. And there were studies that the average IBM pensioner back in those days collected 24 checks and was dead.
Oh, man.
You know, they either work themselves to death or they completely unplug themselves in any sense of purpose and didn't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah, purpose is very powerful in keeping the mental state alive.
And, you know, we're going through a great unretirement trend here in America. Rand did a study here 3-4 years ago, and one of the chief driving factors in the unretirement trend was, one, that people realized there were benefits to work other than financial. Two, was the law of diminishing return on leisure. We've been sold this bill of goods that going into a life of full-time leisure is going to satisfy you. It doesn't satisfy you. And I'll tell you, this is from an IBM pensioner told me this. He said, here's the one thing nobody ever told me. He said, I spent 34 years working for this company and dreaming of the day when I'd wake up with nothing to do but golf. And he said, it took me 2 months into golf to realize that golf was my catharsis from my work, that my golf actually got its meaning from the fact that I wasn't working. Think about that.
Yeah, no, that's true. I can see that. The way you said it just so eloquently, that's really good.
It's so eloquent. So work and leisure draw their meaning from each other. So you see how far off this idea is in our culture.
I guess you could say that's why people love to go on vacation, and they rush through work at the last day so they can cram everything they can before they have to leave, and then they just try to unplug.
Yeah.
And then they get stressed when it's time to get back to work.
Yeah, and well, and you know something else that's crazy in our culture? The unused vacation days.
Yeah.
And you know why? They're paranoid. Mm-hmm. They're paranoid that if they're gone for 7 days, the people in the office will go, what does he do here anyway?
Or that their email will pile up so big they couldn't get out from under it.
Yeah, that's right. They can't unplug because now we have electronic tethers wherever we go. But then on the flip side of that, Steve, I don't know if you've ever been on a Caribbean vacation on the 7th day, scratching your head going, okay, I get it.
I have talked to somebody who has experienced that, but not experienced it myself.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, I get it. So let's get back to work now.
Mitch Anthony from The New Retire Mentality, planning your life and living your dreams at any age you want. Can you leave us with just one piece of wisdom to direct people towards finding that work that they enjoy to do so they don't have to worry about that quote-unquote retirement date?
Yeah, I would just say look for the thing that unites your hands, your head, and your heart. Where you're fully engaged in what you do, you're no longer working. You're collecting a paycheck.
Mitch Anthony, once again, thank you so much for coming on the Money Plan SOS podcast and sharing with us the new retirement mentality.
Yeah, you're welcome, Steve, and thank you for your work.
I love what Mitch says, that we got to find purpose in our life, and we need to find those jobs or those tasks or those things that will bring us money that we can do, and it doesn't have to be tied down to a specific end date, but we can keep doing it forever or transition into new things that interest us and get us fired up in the morning. I mean, financial coaching does that for me. Doing this podcast does that for me. Creating things that help people, that does it for me. And the day job just doesn't do it for me anymore. How about you? Have all the frustrations just been building up over time to where now you just really don't like what you used to love? And what are you doing to try and get into that new career, that new position? Are you taking classes? Are you networking with people? Are you trying to work a side job that gives you a little bit more experience so that you can then go into that interviewing manager saying, hey, I've got this experience under my belt? I'm really excited about finishing reading The New Retire Mentality because it aligns with a lot of what I believe as well, that there's no specific date that I want to retire. I just want to have those options available to me when I do decide to stop working in a specific field or I want to transition into something different, but I've got to have the finances to back that up. Maybe you don't have the finances to be able to jump into a new career right now. Maybe you're just scraping by and only able to pay the bare necessities. Hey, I can, of course, help you with that. But if you want to learn more about what we've been talking about today, about this new retire mentality, then visit MitchAnthony.com. That's MitchAnthony.com. And if you need help with your personal finances to get out of debt, visit MoneyPlanSOS.com. Are you just done with debt? Are you tired of looking at your bank account and wondering why the balance is always lower than that on your credit card statements? Are you ready to take your debt by the throat and just strangle it? Well, it's time to get control of your money. No more fooling around with trying to make ends meet. No more living paycheck to paycheck. no more fear that the next little bump in the road will push you into bankruptcy. Experience the power that comes from finally being in control of your finances and see how easy it is to live on a money plan. Sign up for the virtual budget coaching course that will save you hundreds of thousands of dollars and teaches you how to pay attention, not interest. Visit moneyplansos.com/start and get started today.